Joined in studio by Chris Turnage. We're going to recap the NFL draft with him for the first hour today. The NFL draft, it's been over, and Chris Turnage has had time to dissect it, digest it. And Chris, your thoughts first off on the overall 2014 draft.
You know, like everybody said, it's an extremely deep draft, and so there was guys that were there in the sixth and seventh round that normally in most drafts would be, you know, fourth round draft picks. Some of the best examples, Adrian Hubbard, outside linebacker for Alabama, he thought about coming out last year as a redshirt sophomore and got a third round grade from the draft committee. He ended up being an undrafted free agent this year. Jackson Jeffcoat, All-American from Texas, ended up being a free agent this year, and he was projected as a second or third round pick as well. So I think you saw that kind of trickle down where there was so deep this year where guys that normally be drafted higher ended up drafting lower, and it affected everybody. But overall, it was a very interesting draft. I figured Manziel would end up in Cleveland at some point, and so it'll be interesting to see what happens now.
Who do you think, after looking at the draft, maybe the biggest reach, and it could be a second round reach, who do you think out there maybe the biggest reach, and then who do you think got the best value? I think Bruce Ellington going over 100 to San Fran easily, that's my best value. There's some other good ones out there, but who do you think the biggest reach and best value was?
Yeah, Ellington was a great value pick. I mean, a lot of people had him as possibly a late first round, early second round kid, you know, so I think Ellington is a great one for that. You know, another great value pick is the Rams taking Aaron Donald. They didn't really need him, but they're a true example of, hey, I'm going to take the best player available. Now they've got four first round picks in their D-line. You got Robert Quinn, Chris Long, Michael Brockers, and now Aaron Donald. So that's got to be one of the strongest D-lines out there. You know, and nobody even thought they were taking a D-lineman there. So I thought that was, again, a good value where they were. You know, as far as a reach, there were several that I thought were a reach, especially towards the end of the first round, some that didn't see, you know. Bridgewater might be considered a reach, but I think the reason they did that is kind of like we talked about before the draft.
To get an extra year
on his contract at cheaper price.
And so that's understandable.
Yeah, absolutely. If you like the quarterback.
That, yeah, if you think that's your guy.
Exactly, then why not do it? You know, so other than that, I'm trying to think of a specific person that was a reach.
How about Blake Bortles at number three?
Kelvin Benjamin was a big one. You know, he was a guy that I watched him at the Senior Bowl, and I mean, he's big. He's a big kid. They throw it up to him, but he doesn't really do a whole lot other than that. And so I agree. I thought that was a reach. Carolina needed a receiver, and I think they kind of forced the issue there because they said, hey, we need one. Let's go ahead and get him. Joe, to yours, Bortles, you know, it didn't surprise me that he went there, but that could be a little overreach. I mean, you know, again, I guess ideally they could have maybe traded back.
They could have got him around 10 or so, 11. And the Bills wanted Sammy Watkins, which they traded up to get him, so – they could have essentially done that.
Right.
Traded for the Bills, got another first-round pick in next year's draft. But I do like the fact they didn't mess around with
right.
it. They had their guy.
That was their
guy,
and they didn't want to take a chance. I mean, you could tell they really liked him because they didn't want to take a chance and lose him. So.
1-800-477-1037, 433-1037, the number to call. If you've got a question or comment for Chris Turnage on the draft, we'll be glad to take that. You can also send in Keith Lee Service Company live fan feedback. We've got Chris to the top of the hour. And then we'll be joined by Olin Buchanan of TexAgs.com at 2:05. And, Matt, when I was talking to him today, Texas A&M kind of being known as offensive line U. We talked about it yesterday a little bit with the left tackles.
And with next year,
the left tackle projected around the top 10 as well.
Five.
Yeah, top 10, top five again. And, Chris, your thoughts on A&M and not just the fact that they've had three guys go in the first round this past year to lead the SEC, but the fact that the offensive line 3 years in a row now has produced a first-round draft pick.
Well, it will be next year, right?
Yeah, next year will be.
If he's healthy, he'll probably be a first-rounder. Yeah.
And then they've got another kid, Jarvis Harrison, who's projected as a second round next year. So, I mean, you look at 2 years ago, that's why they were – when people said Alabama had the strongest line ever in the history of college football, you got to put A&M right up there. When you had, you know, Matthews on one side, Jokel, and then you had Cedric Obuhu, this guy that's playing inside 2 years ago. So, I mean, it's incredible that they recruited those type of offensive linemen. I mean, I'm sure Mike Sherman wishes he was still there to be able to capitalize on it because he put together a heck of an offensive line.
What about it? And then your thoughts on Texas? You said Jeffcoat probably could have got drafted, but A&M having three first-rounders and Texas nobody in the draft.
Absolutely. It's crazy. You know, A&M, Baylor had, I think, two or three drafted. You had Rice that had a guy drafted. You had Texas Tech have a guy drafted. So all those schools had one drafted, not Texas. And I think that goes to show you kind of what Mack Brown did and what got him in trouble. You know, it's well known that Mack passed on Jameis Winston at quarterback. He passed on Johnny Manziel at quarterback. He passed on A.J. McCarron.
RG3.
I mean, you look at all those guys that he passed on, and so, I mean, I think it kind of speaks for itself. There were one or two kids from Texas that, you know, should have gone that people thought, Jeff Cote being one of them, and then Carrington Bynum, a cornerback. A lot of people thought he would go fourth, fifth, and so that's pretty amazing, honestly, to see a school like Texas not even get a single player, even as kind of a toss-away seventh-round pick.
And then the Texas transfer ended up getting drafted from SMU, Garrett Gilbert.
Yep, Garrett Gilbert, you know, who Ash actually beat out, and Gilbert transferred, went to SMU, and then he got drafted in the sixth. Interesting story about him is the scout from the Rams that works the Texas area actually coached Garrett in high school, and that was kind of their connection to the Rams, and so he kept coming back, and they kind of pushed him and made the call. But you're right, Joe. It's crazy to think Ash beat out Garrett Gilbert when there was a huge competition there or whoever. And then Gilbert goes to SMU and then gets drafted in the sixth round.
And I don't think it hurts that his dad played in the NFL, so he has a little background, a little insight there.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then June Jones, of course, as his coach, he was once head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, and he's still got some NFL connections that he can call on and help.
Let's head to TK in North Little Rock. TK, thanks for calling. Welcome to Overtime.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Afternoon, TK.
Hey, I just wanted to touch on the NBA and the calls. There's so many fouls on three-point shots nowadays. It is crazy. It's like getting away from the discipline and the fundamentals of what got them there. And just freestyling on this defense, you know, you don't foul a three-point shooter. I mean, ain't that right, Matt?
No, you don't. I did it my senior year in high school. I tried to contest a shot, and the guy hits the three, makes his free throw. We end up losing the game by one.
Oh, boy.
Because they hit a half-court shot, but it was my fault for fouling him with like 25 seconds left. You do not foul a three-point shooter.
You do not. The referee loads up for that. That's what he's anticipating. Most of those calls are anticipation foul calls. And so he's got that whistle, and he's got them cheeks loaded up with an air. And if you even get close, you're going to get called. The second thing I want to talk about is North Little Rock football. My son is a freshman, sophomore-to-be, and I'm going to give a shout-out to him. His name's Tyler Kelly. He's second on the depth chart, knocked the senior down to third. And he's playing left tackle, and he's getting his shine on. And I went over there yesterday to pick him up, and Al T. Timpenny was in there working out. And
nice.
Dude looks like a hoss. I'm talking about.
Al T. looks the part. I know that.
I didn't see an ounce of fat on that dude.
Reminds me of a Cedric Cobbs.
Yep. There,
I mean, Cedric Cobbs, I don't know if he had. I think he – 3.7 body fat or something. I mean, it was
well,
sick.
That's why this guy looks. Yeah, his neck is like almost out to his shoulders. Like, dang.
But congrats to your boy too.
Yeah, he's working hard. We'll be hearing more about it. Appreciate you, man.
All right, thanks. Appreciate the call.
You know, North Little Rock. Interesting talking about North Little Rock football, and you guys might have addressed this, but they had 5 of the top 10 Spark scores in the country come out of North Little Rock High School. I mean, that's pretty amazing when you consider how many thousands of kids come to the Spark. The Nike competition there and have a Spark score.
Now, is Spark 5 different lifts and 5 different type of agility run stuff,
I know
it's a total of 10 events?
It's 5 different – I know 5 different runs and agilities, and then I don't know if it's a full 5 lifts or not, but I know there's –
We had a guy in not Spark, but at Northside, defensive end, who had a perfect 1,000
as far as
the times for his runs and the times for his – or his lifts. He did everything that way, and he could have definitely played Division I ball, but didn't have his grades
right. And
never ended up playing. But as far as I told you, Fred Taylor was the best running back I played with. Sean Andrews, the best offensive lineman I played with. He was the best defensive end. I mean, we played Jinx, and it was Keewon Jones on a sweep to the left, and he went all the way around the line and downfield and catches him from behind. He was just a physical freak.
Wow.
Freak of nature.
Yeah, absolutely.
Chris, the Arkansans that went Zach Hocker, Kiero Small, Travis Swanson, Chris Smith. Any surprise? Maybe Kiero Small he did get drafted?
Yeah, the biggest surprise was Kiero Small, not because he's not a good player at all, but because most of the time teams don't draft fullbacks. They're becoming obsolete in the NFL game for most teams. You've got teams like Seattle, San Fran,
Baltimore
that are going to use the fullback.
I was glad it was Seattle, though.
Yep.
There was only really, five or six teams I thought that would even could draft him. Yeah.
And, he would even have a chance not to even get a fullback, sometimes wouldn't even get signed because, like you said, there's four or five teams that are going to use a fullback and use the I formation. And so that was a little bit of a surprise. Hocker wasn't too much of a surprise. I think we might have talked about him before the draft that I said someone could take a flyer on Hocker. He's got a leg and he's going to come in and pretty much be the man, if you draft a kicker, you expect him to come in and be your starter. So that'll be kind of interesting to see. And then, Travis Swanson went about where I thought. Chris Smith went a little lower than what I thought. And, again, I think that's kind of attributed to just some of the depth of the draft. But then Robert Thomas also signed a free agent deal with Washington, I believe. And then Chris Rycroll, he's going to Green Bay from Wichita Baptist. And then Keaton Steger, a linebacker from Henderson State, is going to Atlanta Falcons. So pretty good overall year overall when you look at it.
Let's head to David in North Little Rock. David, thanks for calling. Welcome to Overtime.
Yeah, I've got a question for Matt. He talked about Fred Taylor being the best running back and the other guy being the best defensive end. Throughout his college and pro career, who would Matt say is the best all-around athlete that he's
Rasheem
ever seen?
Rasheem Mathis. He was a cornerback at Jacksonville. It didn't matter if you were on the basketball court, the baseball diamond, football field, ball skill. You don't see cornerbacks with ball skills. He was long. He was athletic. Best all-around athlete, Rasheem Mathis. No doubt about it.
Yeah, that's interesting because I know a lot of guys that play pro football also play high school basketball, baseball, and everybody always says this guy's the greatest athlete I've ever seen in my life. And I'd have to say, Matt, you're up there pretty high too. But I'll hang up and listen to your comment.
Well, thank
right,
you.
Thanks. Appreciate
but,
the
yeah,
call.
Just a physical specimen was Rasheem Mathis, and I think last year he played for Detroit, but he was our cornerback that. He was the guy that guarded the other team's best receiver. If it was Andre Johnson for the Texans, if it was Reggie Wayne or Marvin Harrison for the Colts, it didn't matter. He was the guy you were locking on him, and more times than not, he was very, very successful.
Chris, when you look at this draft and analyze it, and Johnny Manziel slipping as far as he did, why do you think that happened?
I think it's because I think it's really smart on Cleveland's part. They knew they didn't have to reach that high because they felt like nobody else would take him.
So they weren't afraid that the Cowboys might have taken him?
I'm sure they were a little scared, but again, that probably says a lot that they didn't feel like he was a franchise quarterback to where if they lost him, okay, they could still get somebody else in the draft that they liked. So Jacksonville, on the other hand, is like, hey, Bortles, we don't want to lose him, like what we talked about. So I think Cleveland tried to play it smart, and it wasn't really a huge surprise that Johnny fell that far, because once you got after, seven or eight, there were a lot of teams in there that didn't need a QB. And so, it's going to be interesting. I'm sure you guys have talked about how many season tickets they've already sold. And, you've got jerseys going crazy right now. Manziel's number one. And so he's going to give a face to that Cleveland franchise and going to make it exciting when he comes in.
How many of those three quarterbacks in the first round start day or opening game week one? Bortles, Manziel, Bridgewater, who would you
Bortles.
Say?
See, I don't think Bortles will actually start game one. He could, but I don't think he will because the general manager's come out and said they're going to try to bring him along slowly. But who knows? If they do, I think Manziel will end up starting game one. I don't think Bridgewater will. I think they'll go with Castle, the Vikings. And then I don't think Bortles will. I think Bortles will probably be looking at, sixth, seventh game, something like that.
Maybe, so
I think,
depending on where their bye week is.
Yeah, depending on that and some of those things.
I saw where Cleveland's bye week, I think, was around four. They had an early bye week, so yeah.
When you look at Cleveland and them selecting Johnny Manziel, and now it's come out because rookie camp, starts next weekend, 16th, 17th, and 18th. National media members have been banned from the Cleveland Browns rookie camp.
Right.
Because of the hype of Johnny Manziel. So they're only going to allow the local media that covers the Browns on a regular basis there for minicamp. Is that surprising?
It is, in one sense, because, you know, part of that would generate interest for the Browns. I mean, you're going to sell more nationwide Browns jerseys of Manziel. So it kind of surprised me a little bit, but they did not want to get into a Tebow-like media circus. They clearly stated, we are not going to do this like Tim Tebow. So,
and Tim Tebow was a media circus, and now ESPN has Tim Tebow. And like Matt, you said off the air before the show started, the rollout of Tim Tebow yesterday and for ESPN. His first appearance.
What did I say?
We were talking about Tebow, and now that he's on and part of the SEC network,
right?
And
right.
That circus
his
and everything.
Role, okay. His role. Okay. You said roll out, yeah. And I was thinking ludicrous or something.
No. We weren't going there.
I got you.
We weren't going there.
No, I think he'll do a good job, though. Yeah. I really do.
Roy, hang on the line. We'll be back with more Overtime after this on the Buzz Radio Network. Stay with us. Welcome back to Overtime. Matt Jones, Trey Schaap, along with the Freak, Freaky Joe Franklin, and Chris Turnage in here until the top of the hour. Let's go to Roy in the Rock. Roy, welcome to Overtime.
Hey, how y'all guys doing, Matt, Joe?
Doing good.
And the Freak.
How's it going?
Matt, I really have to tell you, you sure was right about that Mathis, man. He was a freak athlete.
Oh, yeah.
And that Darius guy in the secondary, oh man, he was almost like a Harrison. He'll lay the hammer on you.
I know who you're talking about. He only played my rookie year, and I want to say he got hurt because I saw the highlights before that. But my rookie year, he got hurt, and then he got hurt again, like during camp or something. They cut him. Before, because he was older and the money issue as far as before my second year there. So it was Donovan Darius, I think, and you're right, but I only got to play a handful of games with him.
Okay, and then not to mention them D tackles I had, Knighton, and then that other guy.
Marcus Stroud from Georgia and John Henderson from Tennessee, yeah.
Yeah, then you had them linebackers, so y'all had the defense, but then you turn around, you had that offense with that Jimmy Smith with the wide receiver.
Right.
Then you had you. Then you had the running back with Drew and then
Fred Taylor. And Greg Jones. You had Greg Jones from Florida State.
Oh, the fullback, yep. Y'all come out of Florida State.
Yep.
But them quarterback situation, Brian Leftwich and David Garrard, I wish they would pump you with something and put you at quarterback.
My rookie year, I think we went 12-4, and then my third year again, we were, I want to say 11-5 or something, and won a playoff game, and then both years we were in the playoffs, we got beat by the Patriots. They beat a lot of teams though.
Yeah, it was. Y'all had a pretty good squad. Do you think if y'all had a young Mark Brunell at the helm, when y'all had that defense, I think y'all would have been more successful. And I take it off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Roy.
Mark Brunell's probably Jacksonville Jaguars' best quarterback ever. I mean, I know they haven't had a long tenure there, but Byron Leftwich was just a little unlucky with his health.
Mm-hmm.
Byron Leftwich could make all the throws. He was a great leader, a great locker room guy. Everybody loved him. I mean, he really was. He just got unlucky. And then David Garrard, he can make all the throws too. I still think Byron was a little better, but it was one of those deals. He got hurt back-to-back years, and – they like what they saw out of Garrard, and when you get hurt 2-3 years in a row and you're making that type of money, it's tough to stay around.
Chris, when you look at this draft, what teams do you think did well in this draft, and then what teams do you think really didn't do hot at all?
You know, I think Cleveland did well, part of it, but the other part is, I mean, they desperately need a receiver, especially with the announcement of Josh Gordon being gone possibly for the whole year, and then their other receiver broke his arm. So, I mean, I think Cleveland needed to address that, even though I think Cleveland's draft is good overall. I think they kind of missed the boat there. I think Carolina is a little underwhelming as far as what they did with the draft. You know, it was interesting. I thought Seattle and San Fran – neither one of those teams has much of a need as far as just a specific need. So I thought they might try to trade up and get one big receiver, one superstar guy, something like that. Of course, San Fran made the trade with Buffalo for Stevie Johnson. But I still felt like they were going to do something more. Not that they had a bad draft, and those teams have earned the right to do what they want, certainly with the draft. But I felt like they might try to package up and do more just because there's no way that nine guys come in and make San Francisco's team right now, you know. So
I think San Fran drafted 12 or 13 yep. guys, and Seattle drafted nine. I agree with you there. Nine guys aren't making Seattle's team, and if it's 13 or 12, they're not making San
exactly.
Fran's team.
Exactly. So, you know, what are you going to do with all those guys? But and then, you know, I think Dallas had a decent draft. I know we've got a lot of Dallas Cowboy fans. I mean, I think the key hinges on their second-round pick. If it's worth, when you talk about trading your second and third for him, is he going to be a guy that can get to the quarterback and really do it, when maybe if you stayed where you are, you could have gotten a Coney Ealy and gone that direction. So I think they at least addressed some needs. Whether they had a good one or not will be, you know, remains to be seen if it was worth giving up that third-round pick.
Do you think they were ever – I thought it was a smokescreen when it came to Johnny Manziel, and they were hoping that somebody would actually believe they were going to take him so that they could trade.
Right.
Do you think there was ever consideration that they were going to take Johnny Manziel?
You know, I don't know how serious it was. I agree with you. I think most of it was a smokescreen. However, Jerry Jones did come out after the fact, and he said Johnny Manziel was the top on my board. But I think, you know, that they realized, hey, we just paid Tony Romo $125 million or whatever it is. There's no reason to do that. But they had estimated, they had an economist come in and estimate how much Johnny Manziel would do for their franchise as far as memorabilia stuff, sales and those type of things, jerseys. And so that was a pretty high number, too. But I don't think they really were ever going to take him unless he, like, fell to their laps and, you know, round two or something like that. Then I think you might have seen him. But I don't think they were taking him at 16.
Let's head to Michael in the Rock. Michael, thanks for calling. Welcome to Overtime.
I appreciate you guys. Hey, Matt, I had a question for you. You were talking about your Jaguar days. When you were going through the pre-draft process, was there anybody that considered you as a quarterback? And on a second question, I remember when you were at Arkansas, you preferred basketball, or at least that's what I was told over the radio and through the, you know, the broadcasting of the games and stuff, is that you preferred basketball over football. Did you ever consider maybe after you left Jacksonville and had your year in Cincinnati, did you ever consider maybe a professional basketball career, maybe overseas or anything like that?
Okay, thanks for the call.
You got it.
The combine, the Dolphins, very interested in quarterback. Then you had Philadelphia, the Texans, and there was another team talking to that, it might have been Cleveland, that wanted me to do both, you know, quarterback meetings, receiver meetings, and they knew I had the torn labrum, but with maintenance and proper rehab and everything that I would be able to throw, I couldn't throw every day. Jacksonville, there was never anything with quarterback, really. So that's kind of that. As far as basketball, yeah, when I got done after Cincinnati, I actually had went up to Oakland there and Michigan, and there had Coach Sorensen, who was a coach at Arkansas when I was there, was assistant there at Oakland, and worked out there for a week, and was playing a lot of basketball and was looking into that, but there wasn't the right opportunity. I just got married and didn't want some of the places that we were going to have to go. It just didn't seem right. Like if it's Lebanon, if it's Jordan, you know, if it's kind of, we just both didn't feel comfortable with it. If there would have been something in a Denmark, Sweden or something like that, then possibly, but it just didn't work out. That's kind of the truth of that.
And to kind of follow up, you know, if you go to somewhere like Lebanon, sometimes those teams, they just say, okay, we're not paying you this week. And it's like, what are you going to do? You know, some of those small ones.
How are you going to get out of
that? Exactly.
It was weird, yeah, the whole situation. But it was it would have been awesome. It would have been a great experience. But, yeah, basketball was my first love. Definitely love playing some hoop. But I did work on my golf game a little bit then when at my first retirement.
Just a tad?
I was playing golf 28 days a month, 36 a day. So
you're ready to go on the PGA Tour.
Well, I was about an 8 handicap. I don't think that's good enough.
But you got it down quite a bit.
I think first time I was ever in single digits, yeah.
Chris, next year, the 2015 draft, yesterday we had the first rounders in a mock draft. Marcus Mariota was at the top of two drafts that we went with. I had CBSSports.com. Matt found another one online, and they had Marcus Mariota up there. But Jameis Winston as well in the top 10 in the draft. Kind of give the listeners a clue as to what to watch for this upcoming college football season for those players that will be in the draft next year.
Yeah, you know, Mariota is an interesting talent because he's a little bit bigger than your traditional scrambling, what you consider a scrambling quarterback. And, you know, rumor had it that if he was in this year's draft, that the Eagles were going to do whatever it took to go up and get Mariota to run Chip Kelly's offense again. So he could have conceivably been the first overall pick in the draft this year. Who knows if Philly was truly serious. But, you know, a lot of people like Mariota over Jameis Winston. They say Jameis Winston has a few flaws as far as truly going through reads, and that he was just on such a talented team that he wasn't really making it happen. Now that's what some of the critics are saying. I'm not saying that that's true or not, but you know, you got Bryce Petty up there too. That's more of your traditional quarterback, pocket passer from Baylor. That he's gonna be a first round pick out of there. You know, and then Arkansas, Trey Flowers, interesting. He submitted his grade this year as an underclassman and had a third round grade. Late second, third round grade, and so he's got a chance to really move up there and end up being a late first
and
round.
What
pick.
I've seen is has him. I saw a mock deal on the top 10 defensive ends, and he was like four.
Yep.
And what about the kid from UCLA too? Is it Hundley?
Yep, he'll be up there. I think those are going to be the quarterbacks that you're fighting for. You know, he thought about coming out this year as well. So I think you're going to see those four quarterbacks kind of be the three that you talked about this year with Hundley, Mariota, Bryce Petty, and Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston obviously has some off-field questions with the crab leg incident and then with the alleged rape incident. So, you know, you've got those that are going to factor in as well. You know, as far as Arkansas again goes, you know, surprisingly, Tevin Mitchell is pretty highly regarded in NFL circles. Despite, I know he had a down year last year, missed quite a few tackles, but because he's a bigger body and a bigger corner, and I'm not saying first round by any means. He'll be a, you know, fifth, maybe sixth round pick, but point being is he'll be another Razorback there. And then, you know, your running backs, you're going to kind of see some of the same, I think, as this year, but you could have one or two that sneak up in that first round. I think
Gurley, if he's healthy, he's the closest to Adrian Peterson that's been out there. I'm not saying he's that good, but if he's healthy, he's a Darren McFadden, Adrian Peterson
style. Gurley's a freak that can definitely warrant some attention, you know. And it's going to be interesting to see, too, for some Little Rock fans, what happens with Michael Dyer as he enters the draft next year and see where he goes. I'm not saying he's a first-round pick by any means.
What else I saw that was very, very interesting, the second receiver taken in the mock draft was DGB.
Oh, wow.
Is he playing this year, or what do you see going on with him?
I hear he's transferring to Illinois State.
Okay.
And so Illinois State's going to have a pretty good roster. I know the offensive coordinator there, and he, of course, can't comment until it's official, but he was saying, hey, if he comes, watch out, it's going to be exciting.
Yeah,
you know?
No doubt. Back with more overtime after this. We've got some more Keithley Service Company live fan feedback. Chris Turnage, Matt Jones, Trey Schapp, and the Freaky Joe Franklin. Back with more after this. Welcome back to overtime. Matt Jones, Trey Schapp, along with the Freaky Joe Franklin, along with Chris Turnage in studio with us. He's here to the top of the hour. Romeo in Little Rock on our Keithley Service Company live fan feedback wants to know, the Cleveland Browns also signed Connor Shaw from South Carolina in a free agent deal. What do you guys think about that?
They cut Vince Young afterwards.
Cut VY.
I think if you look at Hoyer, Connor Shaw, and Manziel, they're kind of similar quarterbacks, so I think that's why.
Yeah, I mean, Shaw's going to come in and be the number three guy, but that's a pretty good number three guy. Maybe go on your practice squad, you know, and try to push those guys. Hoyer is not the long-term answer there in Cleveland. He'll be the bridge for a little bit, maybe. You know, if he even starts, Manziel might, but then Hoyer will be the backup, and then that would allow them to move on from Hoyer next year.
And as well, if you look at Manziel, what he does, and if he's compared to an RG3 and Michael Vick, how many times have those quarterbacks played a complete season? So you want a guy like a Hoyer or Connor Shaw to be ready to go in, and you don't have to change much of your offense.
Absolutely. I don't think it's a move for Connor Shaw this year at all, but I think he could come in and like be a backup and be a cheaper alternative to Hoyer next year, if, you know, depending on what happens. But I think it's a good signing by them if they can get a kid like that. He's a gamer. He's a tough kid. as a free agent. You know, normally he might in another draft he might have been a guy that got a sixth or seventh round flyer taken on him. But I think he's a tough, durable kid. Even though he's gotten hurt some, that could be a good free agent signing for him.
Chris, there was a lot of talk about Ryan Mallett and the fact that he might be on the trading block for New England. That did not transpire. New England did take a quarterback in this draft. So what does Ryan Mallett's future look like in New England?
Well, you know, I think it tells you – I mean, I know for a fact they like Mallett up there in New England, but I think it tells you they're not willing to sign him to a second contract when he wants to make – the kind of money that a player makes in a second contract. So it shocked me that they didn't reach a deal, and maybe they still might. You know, I mean, you've got training camp where people are going to get hurt. I mean, how many times have you seen, you know, quarterbacks go down and get hurt? And so you've still got time for them to make a deal, and that wouldn't surprise me at all, or at least for them to get something out of it. Otherwise, they just let him walk away after this year, and then, yeah, they'll probably get a compensatory pick out of the deal, which would be a fourth, fifth maybe. But that's not a whole lot when in comparison to what you could trade for. So it clearly said, hey, Garoppolo, if they're going to spend a second-round pick, he's going to be our backup for the future, and then maybe ultimately the successor to Tom Brady. And so it's pretty telling. So I think they're still going to work on a deal, but at the same time, every other team now knows New England's cards to say, hey, you have to trade him now or let him walk away for free.
Who are some other players around some of the other colleges in Arkansas to be on the lookout for next year that would possibly go in the 2015 draft?
You know, an interesting kid that's under the radar, Kevin Rogers from Henderson State. He's so far he's a two-time Harlan Hill finalist, mm-hmm. which the Harlan Hill Award is the Heisman for D2.
Their quarterback.
So he was a sophomore and a junior runner-up for that. Finalist, so he has a chance to do something kind of in the draft, and he's a bigger kid. A lot of times you see D2 quarterbacks aren't big, and that's why they didn't go D1, but he's a 6'2", 6'3 kid, so he's someone that could be under the radar. UAPB's got a quarterback that's pretty good that could attract a little of attention, and then Arkansas State, they got, I think his name's Quashawn Lee, linebacker, that could end up being in a fifth, sixth round, something like that. So I think you're going to see those guys, and then going back to Arkansas, like we talked about with Trey Flowers and Tevin Mitchell, I think Bray Cook has got a chance. When you're a two-time offensive line starter in the SEC, you've got a chance to get drafted somewhere, and so I feel like he's got a pretty good shot. And then, you know, other than that right now, I think that's pretty much the rundown in the state. I'm sure there might be somebody I'm missing, but I think that's a pretty much the rundown.
1-800-477-1037, 433-1037, the number to call to be a part of Overtime. You can also send us some Keith Lee Service Company live fan feedback. We will get to that throughout the show as well. Let's see. Andrew in Fort Smith, on the controversial out-of-bounds play last night in OKC, I wasn't sure if it was a good call or not, so I looked up the official NBA rules referring to out-of-bounds calls. According to rule number 8, section 2, if a player has his hand in contact with the ball, an opponent hits the hand causing the ball to go out of bounds, the team whose player had his hand on the ball will retain possession. But that rule, it seems like the call last night, would be a good call. I'm still not sure. What are your thoughts? I don't think his hand was hit. I think his elbow was hit.
No, his hand was hit.
But it was his offhand, really.
It was his offhand. It was a foul. And so officials do this all the time.
Yep. They make up for something.
They blow the whistle knowing that it's a foul, and then they give the ball and say it's out on the guy that they should have called the foul on. So the correct call there, if they go to replay, and if you have replay, my biggest thing that I've always said about replay, like the guy for the 49ers that recovered the ball and they couldn't give it to him even though clearly mm-hmm. he recovered the ball. If you have replay, why are these rules here that say, well, if this happens and you see it on the replay, you can't actually call that? The point of replay for me is to get it right.
Well, it was like Mike Jones. Remember him? Played basketball for the Razorbacks.
Yep.
A game at LSU.
The three-pointer.
Yep, yep. They said that his foot was not behind the line, but it was clearly behind the line. Did he travel before he took the shot? Yes, he did. Tom Eads, down there, one of the officials, the lead official in that game, goes, looks at the tape, and on the video board, they show the replay. John Brady screaming that he traveled. They didn't call the travel. They were looking to see whether it was a 2 or a 3. Well, they said it was a 2, because he traveled.
To make up for the travel.
To make
exactly.
up for the travel that they missed.
Right.
Yeah, but that is something they shouldn't have done.
I mean,
then Tom Eades was suspended for a year, didn't work a game in the SEC for a year because of the ruling he made in that game.
Well, and I think also if you had a central station that,
sort of like Major League Baseball now?
Well, and I believe hockey
NFL
does
now.
Too, but and you don't have to do this for regular season games, but playoff games, if you had a central station, because there's not 16 games a night, 15 games a night, you know, there's a couple, so that – and then also the thing about that is you're not influenced by the home crowd. The referee
right.
there doesn't want to take that blame, credit, whatever, where it's called in from a central station where he's just relaying the message. I think that helps get those calls right when instead of having that home court advantage.
Chris, the offensive rookie of the year, who will it be, and defensive rookie of the year?
I'm taking offensive rookie of the year. I'm going to take Jordan Matthews.
Mm-hmm. Vanderbilt wide receiver.
I can tell you, Chip Kelly absolutely loves Matthews, and I was at the Vanderbilt Pro Day, and he just kept talking to him, asking him questions, and so I think he's going to get a ton of action at that spot. Even though they're deep, Philadelphia is very deep. I think you're going to see him as truly kind of step in, and he's filling DeSean Jackson's role. So I think he would be one choice. And then, you know, as far as for defensive, I think you're going to see somebody surprise. I don't think it's going to be Clowney or somebody like that. I think you're going to see somebody surprise step up, maybe like a Kyle Fuller or something like that.
A cornerback has five interceptions, a safety. I like Cooks, too, for the Saints.
Yeah, I do, too. Same type of thing, you know. Hey, they traded up to get him. He's going to fit in.
They're going to get him to rock if he's healthy.
Their receivers are older.
What about Huff also, the guy they took right after Matthews at Philadelphia, the guy that Chip Kelly recruited to Oregon?
Yep. You know, they're loaded. I mean, Chip Kelly wants offense, so they're loaded. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out and if there's enough balls to go around. But I like Matthews a lot.
Chris, we appreciate you coming in.
Absolutely.